Unit 14, Foreign Policy. Text for interpretation. Passage 1. Chinese English interpretation. Text interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
女士们，先生们，当今世界正处于复杂的大变革时期，国际形势总体趋于缓和，通过和平谈判解决争端的倾向明显增强，多极化趋势进一步发展，广大发展中国家在国际事务中发挥着积极的作用，经济因素在国际事务中的作用日益突出，维护世界和平，促进经济发展，是世界各国人民的共同愿望。然而，影响稳定的不确定因素依然存在，霸权主义和强权政治不愿退出舞台，局部地区的武装冲突时有爆发，天下仍不太平。许多发展中国家仍然为经济困难所困扰，发达国家和发展中国家之间的差距继续扩大，世界和平与发展面临着无数挑战。我国奉行和平的独立外交政策，我国积极的外交活动不仅有助于为中国继续进行改革与开放创造一个良好的国际环境，而且也为维护世界和平、促进共同繁荣做出了贡献。但是由于国际舞台上经常出现的新情况和新问题，我国外交工作面临着艰难的局面，因此继续为国内现代化建设营造一个有利的国际和平环境，继续为经济发展、改革和开放服务，仍然是我国外交工作的基本目标。我国积极参与多边外交活动，坚决维护联合国宪章的宗旨和原则，维护联合国在国际和平与发展事务中的主导地位，旗帜鲜明地反对人权高于主权等新干涉主义的谬论，树立了坚持原则、主持公道、伸张正义、维护和平、促进发展的良好形象。我国和外国政府领导人之间的互访推动了双边关系的发展，我国同周边国家的睦邻友好关系继续深入发展，同发展中国家的高层往来增多，同西方国家的关系继续得到改善，我国同世界各国的贸易往来日益扩大，经济技术合作领域不断拓宽，我国积极参与国际事务，在和平解决国际争端、推动全球和区域性经济合作等方面发挥了重要作用。展望未来，我国政府将继续坚定不移地奉行独立自主和平外交政策，同世界各国建立和发展友好关系，反对霸权主义和强权政治，维护世界和平，推动社会发展，促进人类进步。我国将始终不渝地执行睦邻友好政策，愿与同所有的周边国家在广泛领域里进行友好合作。我们将继续加强同广大发展中国家的团结与合作，加强在双边和国际事务中的磋商，进一步增进业已存在的友好关系，共同维护发展中国家的权益。我们希望在相互尊重、互不干涉内政、平等互利的基础上，继续改善和发展同西方国家的关系，增进交往，保持经贸合作的发展势头。我国是维护世界和平与稳定的强大力量，不会对任何国家构成威胁。我国愿意通过平等对话和以双边谈判的方式解决争议问题。我们认为， 国家不分大小强弱，都是国际社会中平等的一员，都有权利选择自己的社会制度和发展道路。我们不把自己的社会制度和意识形态强加给别国，也坚决反对别国把他们的社会制度和意识形态强加给我们。我们主张在平等互利的基础上积极开展国际经贸科技合作，反对各种不平等和歧视性的做法。我们主张各国在和平共处五项原则和其他公认的国际关系准则的基础上，建立和平、稳定、公正、合理的国际政治经济新秩序。我国一贯致力于和平与发展的崇高事业，愿意同世界各国一道，为建设一个和平、稳定、繁荣、美好的新世界而做出不懈的努力。
Passage 2 English Chinese Interpretation Text Interpreting Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure this morning to outline the most important instruments of modern American foreign policy, namely diplomacy, the United Nations, the international monetary structure, economic aid, collective security, and military deterrence. An understanding of these instruments, I believe, will help you further understand the conduct of American foreign policy. The utmost purpose of American foreign policy is to defend national sovereignty and national interests. In light of the history and development of American values, diplomacy has been regarded as the most important instrument to which all other instruments must be subordinated. Its purpose is to promote national values or interests by peaceful means. However, diplomacy, by its very nature, is often overshadowed by spectacular international events, dramatic initiatives, and meetings among heads of state. Worse still, traditional American distrust of diplomacy continues today, albeit in weaker form. Impatience with or downright distrust of diplomacy has been built not only into all the other instruments of foreign policy, but also into the modern presidential system itself. Due to the time limit, I'm not going to talk about this problem in any extensive way. The utility of the United Nations to the United States as an instrument of foreign policy can too easily be underestimated. Over the years since its founding in 1945, the United Nations has been more or less a servant of American interests. The most spectacular examples were the official UN authorization and sponsorship of intervention in the troubled spots of the world with an international peacekeeping force. Consider this fact. The United States provides an average quarter of the UN budget. Many Americans feel the United Nations does not give good value for the investment. But any evaluation of the United Nations must take into account the purpose for which the United States sought to create it: power without diplomacy. In many cases, a victory of the United Nations is a victory of the United States. In recent years, however, with the growing position of China and some other countries in international diplomacy, the United States can no longer control UN decisions as it did before. But the United Nations will continue to function as a useful instrument of American foreign policy. The World Bank was set up to finance long-term capital. Leading nations took on the obligation of contributing funds to enable the World Bank to make loans to capital-hungry countries. The U.S. quota has been about one-third of the total. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, was set up to provide for the short-term flow of money and lend dollars to needy member countries to help them overcome temporary trade deficits. The United States also has a big role in financing the IMF. American commitment to rebuilding war-torn countries came as early as its commitment to the post-war international monetary structure. Enacting American foreign aid constitutes part of the American foreign policy. During the last 50 years, the geographic emphasis of American economic aid shifted from assisting the reconstruction and recovery of Western Europe to Southeast Asia, and then to what became known as the Third World. Many critics have argued that foreign aid is really aid for the minority political and economic elites, not for the people. A much more important critique is that American foreign economic assistance has failed to contribute fully to American interests because its administration is often put outside the State Department. The United States gives great importance to regional collective security agreements. This country has enacted a number of collective security treaties, both multilateral and bilateral. A typical example is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. Americans realize that the United States cannot meet its world obligation through the United Nations and economic structures alone. There is a need for military alliance with other countries for national and world security. Consequently, the United States has consistently devoted at least 6% of its gross national product to defense. Military deterrence was a product of the U.S.-Soviet confrontation since the end of World War II, when the traditional American strategy of demobilization in peace and remobilization in war was broken. However, the size of the defense budget has not been central to the consideration of deterrence as an instrument of foreign policy. What is important is the advanced military technology, which is regarded by most congressmen as the primary deterrence in the world. Although Republicans and Democrats look at the world somewhat differently, and although each president has tried to impose a distinctive flavor of his own on foreign policy, they have all made use of these basic instruments. They all understand that power plus diplomacy is the best solution to the problem of controlling conflict among the distrustful nations of the world.
Extra text for practice. Passage 1. Chinese English interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
女士们、先生们，当前国际局势正在发生深刻的变化。 冷战结束以来，世界形势总体趋向缓和，各国人民要和平、求稳定、谋发展的呼声日益高涨。但是，天下仍很不太平。霸权主义、强权政治在国际政治、经济和安全领域中依然存在，并有新的发展。一些大国奉行新的舰炮政策。 和新的经济殖民主义，使许多中小国家的主权独立和发展利益遭到严重损害，使世界和平与国际安全受到威胁。为了维护世界和平，促进共同发展， 所有国家都必须严格遵循世界反法西斯战争以来所形成的国际关系基本准则，包括和平共处五项原则和联合国宪章的宗旨和原则。任何国家都不能无法无天，肆意违背和践踏这些原则。国家不分大小强弱，都是国际社会的平等成员，各国的事情要由各国人民自己做主，国际上的事情要由大家商量解决，这是一切爱好和平国家和人民的共同意志，也是不可阻挡的历史潮流。开展国际经济交往，应该坚持平等互利，共同发展。制定国际经济贸易领域的新规则，应该充分反映发展中国家的合理要求，注意保障他们的正当权益。发达国家应该也有能力承担更多的义务。任何国家都不得利用自己的优势在经济全球化中谋取特权和损害别国的利益。附加政治条件的经济合作和援助从来不受欢迎，形形色色的贸易保护主义既危害别人，最终也会损害自己，这种历史的教训不应忘记。南北经济差距不断拉大的恶性趋势应该引起高度重视，并采取切实有效的措施逐步加以解决，否则穷国愈穷，富国愈富，不仅发展中国家的经济发展会受到影响，发达国家也难以实现稳定的经济增长。维护世界安全，必须彻底摒弃冷战思维，努力把国际社会的持久和平建立在促进各国相互信任和共同利益的新安全观的基础上。应该通过对话增进信任，通过合作谋求安全，相互尊重主权，和平解决争端，维护民族尊严和国家独立，自主选择本国的社会制度、发展道路和生活方式，不容许任何外来势力干涉内政，是各国人民的神圣权利，也是发展中国家走向繁荣昌盛的重要前提和根本保障。中国的现代化建设需要一个长期的和平国际环境和良好的周边环境。中国的发展与稳定，中国周边地区的和平与繁荣，以及按照和平共处五项原则建立和维护地区安全新秩序，是亚洲各国的共同利益之所在，也是中国的根本利益之所在。中国坚持奉行独立自主和平外交政策和防御性的国防政策，中国的发展不会对任何国家构成威胁，只会有利于地区和世界的和平与繁荣。今后中国发达起来了，也将矢志不渝地奉行独立自主的和平外交政策，坚定不移地同广大发展中国家以及一切爱好和平的国家和人民站在一起。己所不欲，勿施于人。中国坚决反对霸权主义和强权政治，中国永远不称霸，这是中国政府和人民对世界做出的庄严承诺。
Passage 2 English Chinese Interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
The American people deeply admire China for its thousands of years of contributions to culture and religion, to philosophy and art, to science and technology. Now we see China at a moment in history when your glorious past is matched by your present sweeping transformation and the even greater promise of your future.As the Chinese people have their values, we have our own. Americans share a fundamental conviction that people everywhere have the right to be treated with dignity, to give voice to their opinion, to choose their own leaders, to worship as they please. We must also admit that we in America are not blameless in our social fabric. Our crime rate is too high. Too many of our children are still killed with guns. Too many of our streets are still riddled with drugs. We have things to learn from other societies as well, and problems we have to solve. And if we expect other people to listen to us about the problems they have, we must be prepared to listen to them about the problems we have. The U.S.-China policy is one of pragmatic nature. This pragmatic policy of engagement, of expanding our areas of cooperation with China, while confronting our differences openly and respectfully, this is the best way to advance our fundamental interests and our values and to promote a more open and free China. I know there are those who disagree. They insist that China's interests and America's are inexorably in conflict. They do not believe the Chinese system will continue to evolve in a way that elevates not only human material condition, but also the human spirit. They therefore believe we should be working harder to contain or even to confront China before it becomes even stronger. I believe this view is wrong. Isolation of China is unworkable, counterproductive, and potentially dangerous. Military, political, and economic measures to do such a thing would find little support among our allies around the world. Isolation would encourage the Chinese to become hostile and to adopt policies of conflict with their own interests and values. It will eliminate, not facilitate, cooperation on weapons proliferation. It would hinder, not help, our efforts to foster stability in Asia. It would exacerbate, not ameliorate, the plight of dissidents. It would close off, not open up, one of the world's most important markets. It would make China less, not more, likely to play by the rules of international conduct and to be a part of an emergency international consensus. As always, America must be prepared to live and flourish in a world in which we are at odds with China. But that is not the world we want. Our objective is not containment and conflict, it is cooperation. We will far better serve our interests and principles if we work with a China that shares that objective with us. By working with China and making our difference clear where necessary, we can advance our interests and our values and China's historic transformation into a nation whose greatness is defined as much by its future as its past. Change may not come as quickly as we would like, but as our interests are long-term, so must our policies be. We have an opportunity to build a new century in which China takes its rightful place as a full and strong partner in the community of nations, working with the United States to advance peace and prosperity, freedom and security for both our peoples and for all the world. I hope China will more fully embrace this mandate. For all the grandeur of your history, I believe your greatest days are still ahead. Against great odds in the 20th century, China has not only survived, it is moving forward dramatically. And as you build a new China, America wants to build a new relationship with you. We want China to be successful, secure and open, working with us for a more peaceful and prosperous world.